The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and we've got another wonderful show. It's October the 17th, Tuesday, and we're getting ready for our next stop on the PGA Tour, which also happens to be in Asia, as it was last week at the CIMB Classic. We're talking, of course, the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges in South Korea. It's a mouthful, and it's a new tournament. We'll talk a little bit about that. We have Bob Bupka joining us here in just a little bit to get into that and also update us a little bit. We'll talk some Tiger Woods and a little Ryder Cup news is going on. So a lot of things happening here in the wraparound season. We keep saying that, but it is what it is. It's not anything new anymore. The golf season doesn't really stop. It just keeps rolling along. And again, adding a new tournament in South Korea. And even the interest of some warnings that the USGA and the PGA Tour of America and everybody are saying about, you know, the tensions in that part of the country doesn't seem to be affecting the golf tournament, but they're certainly aware of it. And they brought that up before. So, a little bit of interest and intrigue going on in the world of golf as well. Frank Bassett joining us in the Nashville studios as always, home of the victorious Tennessee Titans. Did they win last night, Frankie? Indianapolis beat them?
It was a miracle. It was the miracle in Music City again. Here we go.
Once again, Martin Mariota
standing in the pocket. Yep. I mean, unbelievable. Marcus Mariota. Yeah, I watched it. I'm worn out. So it was pretty exciting. I was supposed to go. It was too cold, so I didn't go.
Oh, was it? Was it?
It's chilly here. It's really chilly. But not too chilly to go play golf, so there. I'm out of here.
Never too chilly. Yeah, 36-22, the final score of their NFL game, Tennessee over Indianapolis. So
hey.
Good victory for you guys.
Yeah. A lot of news about Tiger Woods. And you know, that's it always is. Anytime Tiger does anything, I mean, if he opens the window in his bathroom while he's taking a shower, the media is going to be there to find out what's going on. But one of our good friends who's with us, Bob Bupka, who knows Tiger very well, I'm really anxious to get Bob's insights into what's going on with Tiger Woods right now. Bob, welcome in.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And certainly from a medical perspective, the news is all good. Mark Steinberg, Tiger's lifelong agent, has indicated that the doctors have cleared Tiger for all golfing activity. It was just a couple of weeks ago that he was explaining to us at the President's Cup that he had been cleared to hit 60-yard wedges and nothing more. Now it's escalated to the fact that he can participate, hit golf balls. We saw some video of him hitting a driver. It certainly wasn't swinging that very hard, but it was pain-free, which is so important. However, and want to capitalize on Tim's expertise, yours too, Frank. I have a feeling right now, if we were to take Tiger Woods and restore him to his absolute best when he was dominating, when he was winning those 14 majors, is he good enough to beat the current crop of players? And I have some reservations on saying that he would be good enough to beat these guys at their best now. I don't know, and I'd love your opinion first. Tim, what do you think? Tiger at his best, better than this current crop?
Tiger at his best, if you're talking about if we can turn the clock back and put Tiger at 2000, yes, he could definitely do it, because I think as much as Tiger had a powerful game, he had an even more powerful brain, if you will, and his mind and his domination and his determination, all the things between the ears was where Tiger really excelled. He certainly could hit all the shots, and maybe even more so than some of today's golfers. But I don't think there would be nearly the disparity that there was back then between Tiger and almost everybody else. So I think the gap would be smaller if we're going back to 2000 for Tiger. Now, if we're talking today and where Tiger is, ironically, at the Payne Stewart Cup, which was here in Dallas just over the weekend, Jeff Ogilvie was here, and he spoke at the dinner on Saturday night. And he was asked that same thing by Bill McAtee about, what do you think about Tiger's comeback? Can he come back? And he said if Tiger wants to, and he can acknowledge he doesn't have the same game, and he adjusts his game to work the short game, not hit big bombing drives and everything else, and do, he said, I think he might have a chance. He goes, I don't know that Tiger can do that, though. And that was his reservation. I think that would be mine, too. Can Tiger, although he's gone through a lot of changes in his golf game, can he change his mindset to say, I've got to play a different game now at 40 and still be able to compete and not try to outdrive these guys and not try to hit phenomenal shots, just play solid golf and try to beat them with my mind? It's a question, though, isn't it, Frank, whether or not that would be a new way to play the game for Tiger if he'd be willing to make that change.
At venues less than Torrey Pines, yeah. I agree. Yeah. At venues less than Torrey Pines that he could probably come back. But everybody left one thing out. Well, Bob didn't, but the intimidation factor is gone. Without the intimidation factor, that added value to his game, no, I don't think he could. He was very intimidating. So everybody had Tiger Woods in the back of their mind. They'd stand over a shot, I would assume, okay, I don't know. But you get over a shot, and I know what I'm playing, and my little matches with people, I know, you know, when Roger and I are playing, for instance, I always want to beat Roger. And Roger always comes up with some BS swing out of his fanny that goes over the trees, through the woods, by grandmother's house, and goes in the hole. I mean, and that's what Tiger Woods used to do. He would pull off incredible shots, and everybody knew that he could do that, the intimidation factor. So without that, I don't think he could come back against this crop.
And let me ask you this, too. Bob, it's a very different mindset for today's golfers. I mean, you never saw Tiger socializing like you see today's golfers. They're also, at least seemingly, friendly with each other, patting each other on the back, waiting around the green when one of them wins a tournament or wins a major. You never saw a Tiger waiting around to see if Phil or Sergio or somebody else was going to win a major championship or any tournament. So it's a different kind of a group of players now, the top players on the PGA Tour, than it used to be.
Well, that's a good point you bring up, Tim. But don't forget, Tiger came on the heels of the real competitive group of Nicklaus and Watson. And when we turn back the clock a little bit, and say, wow, there really is a difference nowadays. As you accurately pointed out, the players at the top of the game are friendly with each other. They wait to congratulate after a victory. Partially, I have to believe, is because there's so much money nowadays that, it's not a big deal. All right. Justin Thomas wins the PGA. Well, Dustin Johnson may win the Masters. I mean, there's plenty to go around. Back in, even with Nicklaus, I mean, it was a money situation. I mean, they weren't making the millions and millions of dollars that are being, put out there right now, up for grabs. And one thing that fascinates me in covering this sport for a long, long time, it is said, and I'm not saying that it's not accurate, the intimidation factor, okay? But then my mind wanders to the starting blocks of a 100-yard dash, and one of the contestants is Usain Bolt. Now, is he intimidating the rest of those runners, or is he just faster? Did Tiger intimidate those other players, or was he just better? I mean, it's a hard thing. It really, I've never been able to come up with a barometer that tells me what a player is thinking. I don't even know if Tiger knows what he was thinking. I looked at his putting. You know, he never missed a putt that he really needed. So what was in Tiger's memory of nothing but making putts? Now, suddenly, he started to miss a putt here or there, and then you guys play the game. You play it a lot. You know that, if there's any inkling that you can miss a putt, a pretty good chance that you are going to miss that putt. So the mind games that they talk about in golf, it's at a higher level than I'm capable of ascertaining, that's for sure. The guys nowadays, Tiger intimidated because he hit it 30 yards by everybody. These guys hit it 30 yards past where Tiger hit it at its best.
Yeah.
That's really the question I was asking you guys. You know, can Tiger beat these guys if he has to give up 30 yards off the tee? That's three clubs. You know, these guys will hit an 8-iron. Tiger has to hit a 5-iron. Can he hit 5-irons better than guys can hit 8-irons? That's a big question.
You know, and the interesting thing, too, is, of course, technology will come into play, right? Now we're 20 years maybe removed from the prime of Tiger. Are these guys hitting better clubs? Are they hitting things further? Are they, maybe that's part of it. If you're Dustin Johnson or Rory, you know, your equipment might be better. Certainly Tiger's equipment was credited for the way he played versus Tom Watson and Johnny Miller and Nicklaus and the guys back in the 70s and 80s. So technology might equal things out for Tiger. He might be able to hit the ball further if he had the same technology. But I think it's still the strength of Tiger, the strength of Jack Nicklaus, arguably the two best golfers of all time, I think was in addition to certainly the skills they had, was just what you're saying, Bob, and that is they could hit the shots they needed to hit. It wasn't just putts. I mean, certainly that was it. But they had to get up and down out of bunkers. They had to hit over a creek and a tree. They had to make a bogey when it looked like they were getting a double and a triple bogey. Those are the things that separate, I think, the really great classic golfers and the guys you're going to talk about of all time versus just good golfers. There's a lot of good golfers. There were then, there are now. But that's what separates them. And I also agree that the intimidation, Frank, is really what the opponent takes on, right? If you're intimidated by someone, it's not really what he's doing. He's playing good golf. You're intimidated because of the way you're feeling about it. Tiger didn't sit there and growl at people. He didn't stare at you. He didn't throw tees at you like Roger does when you guys play so you can't concentrate. You know, he just beat you because you were scared. But that's your problem, not Tiger's, right? I mean, in essence.
Okay. Never mind.
No, I'm just saying. It's Tiger played his game. If you played your game, yeah, he got beat. He didn't certainly win every tournament.
My game, everybody kills me.
Yeah. But, so the guys had to,
that's,
you know,
a great point. I mean, that is
they weren't
a really
intimidated.
Good point. So I think these guys today are in better condition. Their conditioning's better. Their health's better. They're eating right. They're doing all the right things. So. You know,
they don't seem so scared either. You know, there's something about today's golfers that play well, they play hard, they're competitive, and everything else. But and maybe
and Bob, this really for Bob and you both. But okay, back at NCAA golf. Let's look at that back in Tiger's era as opposed to the competitive level of the NCAA golf today. Was there a huge difference? Is there a huge difference?
Between college golfers?
Yeah, college golfers and their prep coming into the pros as opposed to when Tiger was coming up and going through what he had to go through to go to the pro, to go to the PGA Tour.
I think today's golfers are much, much more prepared. As a matter of fact, somebody was saying the other day, it might have been Jeff Ogilvie again, that today's golfers are basically professional golfers at 14. I mean, they're not, but they are. They're playing, they're doing the things that guys 20 and 30 and 40 years ago didn't do until they were in their 20s as far as preparation, getting ready, getting back massages, everything else you can do. You didn't think about that when you were 14, 15 back then. Now they do. So they're going through the gestures, going through the motions, getting a team of people around you that make you almost professional when you're a junior golfer way before you're even on the tour.
Well, let's shift gears because there's a lot of talk about the USGA and Shinnecock right now. And I'm reading a lot of different things about will it get messed up again? Okay, and I know Bob has intimate knowledge of Shinnecock. Bob, what's going on in your world in regard to Shinnecock and the USGA?
Well, I just came back from a visit out there. Had a sit down with Jeff Hall, who's going to be responsible for basically guaranteeing to the USGA that the mistakes they made back in 2004 are not going to be duplicated this time around. I mean, Shinnecock basically is a national treasure. If you take a vote of the current crop of players on the PGA Tour that have competed at Shinnecock and ask them the best single U.S. Open venue in the country, the majority is going to say Shinnecock. I mean, golly, the first Open was held there in 1896. I mean, that's quite a ways, quite a long time ago, and to still have that examination test the best players, pretty interesting. They got better weather forecasters now because what really happened in 04 is they got a very warm, drying wind overnight that wasn't anticipated on Saturday night leading into Sunday's fourth and final round, and the golf course really got away from them. The greens were too firm. The seventh hole, in particular, the first two players that played it on Sunday morning with a 9 a.m. Tee time both made triple bogeys on the hole. it was ruled almost unplayable. Yeah. And then they got desperate and put a guy out there with a hose. Yeah. And in between groups, you're looking at somebody standing on a par three in a major championship, watering down the green, trying to salvage something. So that's all behind him. I don't think we're going to have anything like that this time. I saw the golf course, depending on what kind of winter they end up getting up there. It's magnificent. They've taken out a lot of trees so that the vistas are even more dramatic than they were in the past. When I think of 2018, and, you know, I don't like to look too far ahead, but when I think of 2018, a U.S. Open at Shinnecock, a Ryder Cup in Paris, the Open Championship at Carnoustie, you know, the PGA at Belle Reve, what a year we have coming up.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a huge year. I really wanted to hear your insights into Shinnecock because you know a lot about that and you've just been there. And it's just, it's in every golf publication right now. And of course, also the Ryder Cup is, they're talking about it all day, every day right now. I guess because it's a slow, I shouldn't say slow week on the PGA Tour. It's not. There's a big tournament, but there's no radio coverage and there is television coverage, but it's late at night. So I guess a lot of media is grabbing for stuff to talk about. And one thing about Shinnecock, Bob, were they injecting? I heard that they were injecting, like with big syringes, water into the greens also at night. Did you hear about that?
Back in 04 or right now?
No, at 04, yeah.
No, I never heard anything like that.
Somebody's making it up there.
I don't think it occurred. But, you know, one of the fascinating things that happened at Shinnecock was, you know, it opened in 1894, I believe. They held the first Open there in 1896. They have the fourth professional that's there now. The first guy, Charlie Tom, he came from Scotland. He was the pro there about 50 years and then replaced by Don McDougall, who was there almost 50 years. I mean, they don't change pros at Shinnecock too often. I mean, it's just, you know, and money is no object at Shinnecock. They needed to get additional space in the clubhouse recently. So what did they do? They lifted the building up and then dug a hole and they had a basement. I mean, to lift that clubhouse up, I mean, was some engineering marvel and incredible. And the clubhouse itself is fascinating because it was designed by Stanford White. He only built two clubhouses. The other one happens to be at Palmetto, Aiken, South Carolina, where Kevin Kisner plays, and that's a miniature of the Shinnecock Clubhouse. And he also designed Madison Square Garden, the original Madison Square Garden.
Know that.
So
he was
a pretty good architect, I would say. If you build a clubhouse at Shinnecock and then you build Madison Square Garden in Manhattan, you got a pretty good reputation.
We're being joined by Bob Bupka, voice of the Grill Room, being brought to us by Vertical Groove Drivers. Is that right, Bob? How do people find out more about Vertical Groove Drivers?
Well, all I have to do is go to vertgolf.com, and more people are getting a hold of me saying, thank you, my game is improved. And I always want to know, why what happened with your game that it's gotten better? And the response is always the same. I hit it further, I hit it straighter, and that's because they're using a vertical groove driver. Try it yourself. You'll like it. VertGolf.com.
Yeah. VertGolf.com.
Yeah, you can go on and customize it, too. So, by the way, I'm going to change my grip. I went to the jumbo grip on the vertical groove driver that I have, and I think I'm starting to kind of – I need a smaller grip. Enough said on that. You know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm pushing
yeah,
it right.
Okay.
So I need to get those hands over a little better. So, but I love mine.
It
is. It's
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
But you can do it online with them, which is really cool. You know,
VertGolf.com.
That's really good. Hey,
comes
what's going
on? Very cool box too.
Yeah, no kidding. It looks
beautiful.
Like a jewelry case.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, what's up on the Grill Room this week? And where can people listen to that?
Well, you can hear us on TuneIn Radio, of course. TheGrillRoom.com is probably the best place. Wherever we can possibly be, we like to tell a story of what's happening in the world of golf. We'll be talking a lot of Ryder Cup. We'll obviously also be talking on Tiger. And one thing that Tim said, and I really think that this is significant, and I didn't plug this in. You know, these guys nowadays, they are using the very best in equipment. There's no doubt about that. So I have to think that if Tiger starts using this equipment, he is going to gain some yardage over
sure.
his best. So that's going to cut down the discrepancy just a little bit. You know, that's a great point you made there, Tim.
I appreciate it.
It is.
I mean, there's always technology changes that, you know, every 10 years or so you look back and wonder about it. And Bob, we know you have to go do your other show. Before you leave though, I want to ask you about switching gears big time here to another sport. You're in Houston and you come to us from Houston often when you're at home, and your Astros are 2-1 up on the Yankees in the ALCS. Is Houston, after all the bad stuff that's happened, is Houston catching fire here because of what's going on at the Astros? Is everybody really excited about that down there?
Well, Houston's really a buzz about the Astros, and you know, just a tremendous bunch of guys that you know, bringing fun back to baseball. Very tough situation for me because being a New Yorker, I got some Yankee ties and
sure.
I got some Astro ties. So I know I'm going to be happy at the end of this series because to me it doesn't matter. But it's fun to watch. You know, it's 2-1 now. We'll see what happens with the Astros. They're a dynamite team. But it's tough to win in Yankee Stadium, so we'll wait to see. Just one real correction I want to make. I said you could hear the Grill Room on grillroom.com. We switched over to better signal on the grillroom.net. So
okay.
grillroom.net. Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. Fun talking Tiger, fun talking Ryder Cup. Frank Bassett, the only jumbo thing you need is a money clip, not a golf grip.
No. It's skinny.
That's a good final comment, right? Way to go, Bob. Thanks for that. Have a great day, Bob. We appreciate
it.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Take care. Bob. Yeah. It made me think when he said, you know, that Shinnecock, has, unlimited funds, I said, or doesn't have any concerns about money. I said, neither does Golf Talk America. We have no money.
That's right.
So we have no concerns whatsoever.
You should have said that. What happened? You should have jumped in there. We have no concerns because we're broke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have nothing. So
in
why
fact,
worry about
send
it.
Your dollar bill today to P.O. Box 24778-8899, Shawshank,
fundraiser.
New Jersey.
Yeah.
We're starting
our own.
Hey, let's go back to, well, I don't know. Where were you going? I'll let you
go ahead. I was going to ask you about your Ray Stevens golf tournament. I was going to talk a little bit about what happened with me at the Payne Stewart Cup.
Yeah,
so,
well,
how did you play over the weekend?
Was it
Friday last week?
It was Thursday and Friday. The big event was Thursday afternoon and night, and the dinner, and Ray performed for a very intimate group. And I got to tell you, very intimate group, a small group of people. We weren't intimate with each other. It was a small group of people. Oh my God, he still got it. I mean, he just gets on that stage and takes over. You know, he headlined for 5 years or more. I probably shouldn't say five because I'm not sure. I think it was a lot more at the Desert Inn, in Vegas forever. Cool. I mean, the Ray Stevens show. So, but what's cool, and we'll be posting it today on Twitter and Facebook and all that, is a picture where I have Jim Stephanie, who was Ray's manager, road manager forever, and negotiated all those contracts. He told me the story, by the way, that at the Desert Inn, also in that contract for all those years, were two tee times and four golf carts every day.
Really?
For them. That was part of the contract. They had to have tee times and golf carts. So, but we had had Jim Stephanie, Ray Stevens, of course, myself, and Bergen White. And we'll get that picture posted, or the took a team picture, whatever. Bergen White has one of the best arrangers in the world. When you say when I say arrangers, I say arranging music, if you understand how to put chords together and pieces together and voicings and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Which, since I was a music major, right? Well, Bergen, just, I said, Bergen, what are you up to now outside of doing everything for everybody from Elvis all the way down? Bergen said, well, I'm going to run over to Martina's. We're going to put together some new stuff for her, you know. So he was talking about Martina McBride.
Nice.
But, and then we had Buzz Kaysen. Buzz did play with the Crickets, by the way. Buzz says, Ray, you said I didn't play with the Crickets. I played with Buddy Holly. Come on.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I know. We stirred it up there. But Buzz Kaysen was with us. Buzz owns Creative Workshop here in Nashville. Kevin Costner was just there recording a new some new cuts.
That's so, right. He does kind of have a band, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's got a good band, So Ray's had everybody, Buzzy has had everybody in the world in his studios, from Elvis to Streisand all the way. And it was just great, that tournament and that group raised a lot of money, but it was just so much fun. The old guard of Nashville. This is the old true, the real artists. I mean, and not to take away from the Taylor Swifts of the world and the Blake Sheltons and all those guys, but in those days, when you recorded, you burned up some acetate tape, okay? You couldn't punch in and punch out. You didn't have software. You had microphones. You had egg cartons on the walls. You had reel-to-reel acetate tape. You know, they used to call him One Take Straight. George Strait would always record here. He'd walk in, sing his song, walk out the door. That'd be it. I mean, he'd done.
He had a tee time, too.
Yeah, George does play a lot of golf. Yeah. But it was just great. All the guys. Temple Hills Country Club here is where it was.
The weather was good? The weather was fine?
Beautiful. It was perfect. And I, by the way, hit the ball, unbelievable, to me, as good as I've hit it in 2 years. I couldn't miss.
That
I think I missed one fairway. We used my drive about 90% of the time, and I was just tagging it, just absolutely ripping it. And this isn't a commercial for Vertical Groove, but I was ripping it, and it was just, I was on. So, having a great time. I've retired my irons. They're in timeout. The new one should be here tomorrow that you and I went and procured in Dallas.
Yeah. So, when you say procure, do you mean steal? Right? We stole them.
I
diverted their attention. We went in the back room, and next thing I knew, Frank was in a moving vehicle.
No, they're on the way. They're on the way from Carlsbad, by the way. They're in Fort Worth right now. I just looked at my tracking.
Oh, got your tracking.
So
look
at
that.
My new 718 Titleists are on their way with the cool fitted shafts, and I can't wait to get them. I didn't go ahead and pick up a couple of new wedges. Those new Vokey wedges are supposed to be really, really hot.
And
what I want to do, and this isn't a procurement commercial here for Titleist wedges, but I do want to bring on. I think it would be good for our listeners, because when you go out to buy wedges, you know, you can get, you know, four or five different grinds. Okay, a K grind, an M, an S, whatever. What does that mean? What does that mean to John Doe walking into a golf shop, or you know, you can ask the pro, whatever. And I'd really like to get Bob Vokey on here from Titleist, or at least someone from Titleist to talk about that. I think that would be an interesting topic.
It would be.
Because we've already had Jim Grunberg, you know, the scoring club, the putter. But, you know, when you talk about wedges, you know.
Hey, I'll be honest with you, Frank. There's so much terminology in golf, and I love golf as much as the next guy. But I don't – maybe I just – it's – limited mind space. I don't know. I just different terms.
The
I
term
really
you and I
know.
Are most familiar with is four.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I mean, I can't give you a lot of, talk about bounces and all that kind of stuff. I just don't get into them. It's the weight of clubs and all that kind of stuff versus the guys, you know, obviously they do it for a living, talk to you, and they're so, and I'm like, wow, it's fascinating. They're almost scientific.
Jim was. Jim at Dallas Golf. Okay, we've got to give them a plug because they're great. DallasGolf.com.
Yep. Jim George. Yep.
Jim just walked over there, watched me take two swings. He went, hang on a second. Here, play, hit this one. Bat, bat. Oh, hold on. Okay, tweak it. Hit this one. He said, there you go. And everything just, it was from pushing it to bringing it straight to straight draw. And he just but it was all about fitting. It was all about the fitting.
Yeah, your shaft. We had different shafts. Yeah. He said, try this, try that. Yeah. And so, and obviously, that's what a lot of those guys do. So you would hope that they can kind of look at your swing, my swing, or anybody's and go, okay, you need to do this or that. Because you're not going to change your swing, right? The equipment can be adapted to your swing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's easier for them to say, well, Frank, go with this shaft, not that one, as opposed to, well, Frank, if you take the club back a little bit more inside, you're not going to do that. They're not giving you lessons. They're just trying to fit you with the equipment. And that's it's a good point for a lot of people out there. Most of us don't want to change our swing. I don't want to go through a lot of lessons to change everything up. But go get fitted. Get the clubs that are right for your swing. You might be more upright. Might be shorter, taller, a lot of different variables. And you can't just necessarily walk off the street and into a pro shop and get the same clubs everybody else gets.
And that's
what we're talking about
you're
a taller guy. Yeah. And so you got to get the right ones that are fit for you. So.
And mine are what, are they an inch longer?
I think
almost three quarters.
Because you're 6'8", 6'9", something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm playing. I'm retired from the NBA.
So you got to make sure
the NBA stands for no bassets allowed.
Right clubs.
Yeah.
Hey, before
but
we go, I'm going
to. But don't close us out yet.
Okay, no, I'm not going to.
We don't have more to say. Yeah, I've got.
No.
It's been so long since we've seen each other, bro.
I had something to say.
Oh,
I said.
Well, go right ahead.
I was changing from your set of golf clubs to the Payne Stewart Cup.
Yeah, let's hear about that. Didn't send me one picture. Not one picture. Nothing.
Look in your phone. I'll bet you see one right now if you look in your phone you're going to put on our Twitter page, Facebook page.
It's you and Payne.
It's me and the guys at the Payne Stewart Cup. We played over the weekend. We just played yesterday, actually. The event was Monday. Sunday.
Is that your group I'm looking at?
That's my group. It's me and a couple of hockey players there that, if you're familiar with hockey, play with the Dallas Stars. Brendan Morrow and Marty Turco, goalie.
Yeah, there's Marty.
And Frank Voigt is another friend that played with us. That was our foursome. You can tell in the background there, just a picture-perfect day yesterday. And we had, like you were saying, we had great weather.
Oh, those are my sunglasses. Those are my sunglasses.
Really nice. No, they're not.
Where'd you get those?
Stole them out of your bag, yeah. we played at Trinity Forest. I sent you a picture, too. The clubhouse is almost finished at Trinity Forest.
Oh,
and that course is the new course in Dallas that is going to be the host of the Byron Nelson next spring. It'll be the first time ever, first time in about 32 years that they won't be at the Four Seasons in Las Colinas, where you just were for the Jordan Spieth event. And so to be out at Trinity Forest. And I'm really intrigued, Frank, how people are going to receive this golf course. I was talking afterwards, and I'm not trying to name drop. They just happened to be there. But Harrison Frazier, Hunter Mahan were putting on the green when we finished playing. They didn't play in the tournament.
Right.
Harrison has just had hip surgery, so he can't play. Hunter told us he has a torn meniscus, but he still can play with it. So he's going to be playing at the Sanderson Farms Championship in a couple of weeks where you may be in Jackson, Mississippi.
I might run on down to Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was talking to those guys. What do you think the pros are going to say? What do you think? And it was kind of, we'll see, because it's going to be very different. And when we talked to Ryan Palmer at Jordan's tournament as well, and asked him about it, and I think there's going to be some very mixed reviews on the Trinity Forest course. And again, the big picture, this is funded in large part by AT&T, the title sponsor for the Byron Nelson Championship, and AT&T wants to have some major championships in Dallas, and they put a lot of money into this golf course and hired Crenshaw Corp to come in and design it. And said, okay, we want it to be so that they can look at this as a site for a PGA Championship, a U.S. Open, Ryder Cups, President's Cups, whatever it might be going forward the next 20, 30 years where they might be able to have a championship on a course like that. So having said that, there isn't a tree on it. It's a very – they're calling it Heartland course now because you can't be a links-style course without an ocean being there. And unless I missed my plane recently, I don't think I fly over any oceans coming into town. So it can't be a links course.
You fly over Houston.
Yeah.
That's a bad joke. Bad joke.
It can't be a links course. But
there's one tree by the clubhouse. I see.
That's one tree. Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, there's no trees, no water, really. I mean, there's not creeks and things going through it. So it is truly like watching a British Open, if you will, that you have to make sure you hit it in the right places because it's rolling hills everywhere. The greens are enormous. They're really fast, and they are also undulate. So the challenge, and you can kind of picture this if you think of Ben Crenshaw and the way he played, Ben Crenshaw never overpowered a golf course, right? He would kind of outthink it. He would figure out where to hit it. Even at the Masters, when he won a couple of times, he'd know how to hit the putts and how to hit his approach shots to the right part of the green to make the, that's what he wants to do here, is let you think about it. And in the really big picture, I told you that Jeff Ogilvie was speaking. Bill McAtee interviewed him during the dinner on Sunday. And Jeff Ogilvie is really getting into course design, Frank. I don't know if you or a lot of people know that, but Jeff Ogilvie is not playing as much as he used to. And he's getting into course design. And some people think he's going to be one of the premier course designers over the next 10, 15 years because he and his partner are very big on, similar to what Ben Crenshaw, and I guess most people can remember this as Pinehurst, if you remember a couple years ago.
When he redid it,
when Martin Kaymer won it. Remember all the different reactions people got then, Frank? That was, what, four years ago now or something? Because they took away sprinklers. And they said, you know what? We're not going to water the rough. It's not going to be lush. Let it go to whatever it goes to. And it's going to be nappy and brown and whatever. Okay, that's what it is. That's where you, if you hit it in there, that's what you're going to hit out of. Because they, Crenshaw Corps and Jeff Ogilvie, think that's the way golf is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be a watered down fairways where you get no roll on the course. It just lands where it lands. And it's created a lot of bombers so that if you can carry the ball 270, 290, 310, whatever, then you're in good shape, but you can't hit it 240 or 250 and let it roll out. That's not the way courses are designed in this country a lot. So they're going back to the old school, and that's what this course, the Trinity Force course, is like. You can hit some low little screamers, and you hit short of the green oftentimes. You don't even hit it onto the green, because if you do and land it near the pin, it goes right off the back. So you got to play the game. So I like it, but it's going to get a lot of mixed reviews because there's going to be some pros that are used to hitting the ball right at the pin and stopping it on a dime.
Well, I look forward to getting back over there and playing that course. I really do, even though you wouldn't let me play it while I was there. By the way, did Ryan Palmer show up yesterday or for the event?
I didn't see Ryan. No,
because he can't play right now. He's, you know,
he might have rehab to go to or something. Yeah, and Harrison Frazier will be on with us again either this week or next week.
Oh, good.
He's got a couple more weeks left of recovery. He's off his crutches. He had to be on crutches for like 6 weeks. He's working with our good friend Troy Van Beesen for his physical recovery, if you will, and they just took him off. He had like 8 weeks with crutches. He said, I was bent over like an old man. He said, I almost had to learn how to walk again without, you know, leaning forward on my crutches. So, you know, sometimes we don't think of golf like we think of football and other sports with major injuries, but obviously, these guys have to tweak their bodies and keep them in shape and get back in shape.
Speaking of injuries and comebacks and learning to walk again and whatever, our good friend Kevin Sorbo, the actor in L.A., Hollywood, Hercules, for those who, Andromeda Strain, he's done a ton of stuff over the years. God's Not Dead is another movie he produced and starred in. Has a new movie coming out, and you know, Kevin went through some tough times. I mean, he had a stroke, went through some really bad stuff, and had to relearn a lot of the motion. So, and a big golfer. I mean, diehard, crazy golfer, plays in all the celebrity tournaments. Talked to Kevin. He's going to come on and talk about his new movie, Let There Be Light. So Kevin will be on either the end of this week or first of next week with us. We're going to get that squared away. And I want to talk to Kevin about what he does with his body and golf. The same thing. He goes through all the same stuff the pros do, and he was a workout freak, and so anyway, not a workout freak. He just was very
healthy.
Yeah. I mean, we were having dinner here in Nashville at one night, and I reached over for the pepper to put it on, and he said, "Oh no, you shouldn't use that. That's not good for you." I'm like,
but I like pepper.
But I like pepper, Kevin.
I like salt. I like pepper.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, he's gonna join us, and we'll talk about that and how he rehabbed and his golf and. Yeah, it'll be fun. You know, like we say, we're the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment, and that's the entertainment side. And by the way, Laura Bryan is going to be performing, just for our listeners. She's got a couple of shows coming up in L.A. I might go out for one. But she'll also be performing down in Mississippi at Morgan Freeman's place. And there'll be more details coming out as we get closer to that event. But there's a golf tournament that'll be down there. So you might not have gotten the old your
corporate jet?
In your BMW i8 or whatever that thing is.
Yeah, a corporate jet.
And blister over here and play in that thing with us. You know, meet Morgan and hang out. That would be fun too.
Morgan's from Mississippi, is he not?
He is from Mississippi. That's why his venue's there and the charity and all that. So Laura Bryant will be performing for that. We'll have her on to talk about what's happening in Los Angeles too, and her golf game. She's learning to play golf. So Oh boy, that's going to be a good one.
we were talking about the tournament coming up there, the Sanderson Farms Championship.
Yes.
And that is October 26th through the 29th. It is the next tournament. We were wrong in telling people the HSBC is next. So after the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges this week will be at Sanderson Farms.
That's what
I thought. And then the World Golf Championships HSBC back in Shanghai, which seems a little weird because you'd think, well, once they're over in Malaysia, you know, as far as tour players and Korea, they would stay and be in China, but no, they got to come back. If they want to go to Jackson, Mississippi, and then go back to Shanghai if they choose, and then back to Las Vegas for the Shriners. Those are the next few tournaments.
They need a southern draw.
A lot of travel.
So we'll go to Jackson.
A lot of travel going on right there, but it's once again, season never really ends for golf, and I think it's going to be the Sanderson Farms. I said Hunter Mahan working his way back. We'll get him on the show as well. Working his way back. I think he's still ranked 400th, 500th, something like that in world golf rankings. And it's amazing. Some injury, some just wanted to spend time with his young family.
Good for him.
Some just not playing as well because that's kind of the game, right?
Some of it was not play well. Some of it was, Hunter was in jail. Most of our listeners don't know that, but after he's destroyed the mailbox and the Ace Hardware commercial.
I was wondering where you're going with this one.
I'm kidding, Hunter. I'm kidding, buddy.
He was in jail.
That's a great commercial when he just hits the mailbox. I love that.
He's got to get on his phone and order a new mailbox.
I am from the South, and we were guilty in the old days of growing up, riding through the country and maybe throwing something at a mailbox or two. But I never did it. I was driving.
You heard about it.
I heard about it. Yeah.
Never did it. Hey, back to the dinner at the Payne Stewart Cup, Jeff Ogilvie talking. And again, people probably don't hear Jeff Ogilvie talk all that much. He's not like he's in the middle of the media storm all the time. But very interesting, his take on Tiger Woods. And he articulated about a lot of different things, including his philosophy on golf. But when we were talking earlier with Bob Bucha and about Tiger, Jeff was asked that about his feelings. If Tiger came back, can he play? Can he compete? He was very skeptical that he could. Mostly, he said, because I just don't know if Tiger, he's never really shown, and this is very true, he's never really shown a desire to, he put it in a nice way, but kind of humble himself to say, okay, here's where I'm at, and I've got to go back to almost square one and work on my game and my short game, my chipping, my putting, all that. He said, and he goes, and maybe rightfully so, for a guy who's won 14 majors and by far the greatest golfer of his era, Ogilvie's era, he said there was nobody who could compete with him, and we all knew that. We all knew he was better. I just don't know that if you now remove him from 5, 6, 7 years of being as competitive, if he's going to be able to say, okay, let me just bring it back to the raw basics and learn my swing and do all this stuff. He goes, I just don't see that he'll do that. But he said if he does, he could certainly compete, but he doesn't think. And I kind of agree with him there, too. I don't know that Tiger, he's always worked out, and he's gotten advice to stop working out so much and do all the things, and he hasn't done that, and it's led to more injuries. He's come back too quickly from injury, so I don't know if that's Tiger's MO, that he's going to, say, okay, let me, he's certainly not going to go play in some web.com events or some other things to try to get his game back like 98% of the tour will do, because there's some pride factor. He's Tiger Woods. So we may have seen the last of Tiger as a competitive golfer at that level, and maybe he's phasing into, Tiger would be an awesome, like, all-time Ryder Cup coach, wouldn't he? I mean, just to kind of name him as the future Ryder Cup coach and let him be the guy for the next 3 or 4 Ryder Cups. I think he kind of enjoys it. If you watch him during the President's
coach
Cup,
coach or assistant captain, or I mean, what?
To be the captain. I mean,
he's eating up with.
He really
it.
Enjoys
I mean, Davis
it.
Love said it. Davis said he finally had to just stop looking at his phone. He'd go, Tiger, leave me alone. Because he said Tiger was bugging him, text, let's do this. What about this?
With
what
advice,
this?
Advice. And he said he was great with the young players. And so I think sooner than he thought, but Tiger's kind of phased into that level of his world in his game. And maybe he's come to terms with the fact that, okay, I'm okay if people think me and Jack are the two greatest all time. You can argue which one maybe, but that's a pretty short group. The argument usually starts and stops with those two names. That's not a bad place to leave it, as opposed to come back and miss a lot of cuts and do the things he was doing. And Ogilvie touched on that too. He said, well, that wasn't what Tiger wanted. You don't want to embarrass yourself. You don't want to go down. And we've often seen athletes, whether it's Ali, whether it's Michael Jordan, they kind of hung around too long, right? And they weren't the same. And you're kind of going, well, see Muhammad Ali get beaten by guys that you don't even know who they were was sad, right? You're going, wow, the greatest. I mean, you shouldn't be doing that. And Tiger being in that level of a conversation, I don't think wants to be doing what he's done the last few times we saw him competitively play golf, which is drop out of tournaments, you know, miss cuts. And so, you know, maybe that's where he's going to be. He'll just be a great coach. He was awesome. He laughed like, I don't know if you remember when was it Kistner and Mickelson made a big putt and they did the Three Amigos?
Oh, yeah.
Salute. Remember that
wiped
one?
Wiped him out.
And behind, you can see Tiger standing there, I think, with Davis or somebody, and Tiger was, like, bent over laughing. So he's having a good time. I think he enjoys being around the guys, and as long as he's still around them and certainly idolized by almost all the guys that are playing today, young guys, Spieth and Thomas and all of them, that's a good place to be, I think, for Tiger. Yeah.
So, well, I agree. Anyway, before we go, got to say this. The club at Nine Bridges, placed at 7196 yards, par 72. It's located on, and I'm going to butcher this, Jeju Island. I'm not sure how to say that. I should know that. Sorry. But it's a resort destination just south of the Korean mainland. Nine Bridges opened in 2001, and it's ranked among the world's top 100 golf courses. So it is a resort destination. And the tour has been very diligent, by the way, and the security over there, and things seem to be going very well. Working with the State Department, the commissioner will be there, Mr. Moynihan. So Jay's heading over. So it's going to be a good tournament. Check it out. Go to pghtour.com to check out TV times. There will be no radio coverage by our team unless they send Tim over at the last minute to do the play-by-play.
I want to straighten things out over
there. There you go. Yeah. So anyway, it's going to be good. I mean, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to record it. I'm not going to be up at 2 a.m. watching it, but I will watch it after the fact. But anyway, it was fun stuff.
Yeah,
fun seeing you in Dallas, and glad you enjoyed the Payne Stewart Cup. I had a great time at the Ray Stevens thing. Thanks to the Spieth family again for all the fun we had in Dallas and all of our new friends we met over there. And wow, fun times in Dallas golf.
Yep.
For heaven's sakes, we
get your new clubs. Let us know next time we talk. You might have your new clubs. You can tell us how wonderful they are.
They'll be here tomorrow, and guess where I'll be tomorrow afternoon.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. So anyway, we're gonna work toward talking a little bit about wedges. I think that's important.
Okay.
I didn't realize how important it was because I've played with the same wedges for years, but they're worn out. They're slick.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's time to change. Anyway, it's always fun, man. Always fun talking to you.
All right. Let's play some music. We're out of here.
Music.
We enjoyed everybody.
We change our music.
You think so? Maybe.
I think we should, you know. Kid Rock stuff's getting old.
Let's start working on that. Let's start working on that with Laura. Have her
sing
us a new theme song or something.
Or maybe The Who will do something for us.
We'd like to thank Bob Bupka for being with us. Be sure to watch Bob Bupka, listen to Bob Bupka on The Grill Room. Tune in radio. Bob Bupka, thanks so much for being here. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks each and every one of you for joining us. And please be here next time and join us on Golf Talk America. We'll see you then.